Welcome to the Passive Income Through Multifamily Real Estate Podcast, brought to you by Vertical Street Ventures, where we talk to top experts and seasoned investors to help provide clarity and key insights to keep you safe on your journey to financial freedom. Our goal is to help you get educated on how to create passive income for you and your family using real estate as your vehicle. If you enjoy the show, please go to iTunes and leave a rating and a written review to help us grow and reach more listeners.
Welcome back to the Passive Income Through Multifamily Real Estate Podcast. My name is Peter Pomeroy and I am your host. Today we have Anthony Faso and Cameron Christensen with us. Guys, welcome to the show. Let's start off by each of you sharing a bit about your background and how you connected with each other and what you guys are up to today.
Yeah.
Cameron?
A little bit about my background is originally I'm from Idaho, and then I moved to the big city, Las Vegas, 20-something years ago now. And I started a business pretty quickly after moving here and had some success, started putting some money away. And I was a small business and I was looking for opportunities or what to do with my own money. And I went to kind of the Edward Jones guy, right on the corner, started talking to him, and they gave me some options. And none of those options really sounded like a good idea, to be honest. Really, what it came down to is every advisor I met at that point had really said, hey, put your money into this account. And I would ask them when I could come back for it, and they would tell me 59 and a half. And Peter, I was young, but I wasn't dumb, right? I was like, this is the craziest idea I've ever seen, right? And most people just accepted it. And so really, from a business owner's point of view, I just thought it was completely illogical to put my money away for that long of a period of time. So I sat on cash. I kept looking for opportunities. And really, I came across a couple of strategies, one specifically, which is called infinite banking, where you can use whole life insurance policies to overfund, create cash value. And so I actually started implementing that on a personal level for myself and for my business, and actually started kind of teaching people that. So I've been in this space for about 13 years now, and I met Anthony. Him and I started working together in a little firm, and then we both left and partnered on Infinite Wealth Consultants about 3 years ago.
All right. Mm-hmm. Anthony? I would say
for me, I'm born and raised in Las Vegas. After high school, I joined the Army, went to school on the GI Bill, got a degree in accounting, and became a CPA, had worked for PricewaterhouseCoopers, CFO for a chain of restaurants, and then I eventually opened up my own firm. And then 2008 happened, and I saw the devastation of people did everything right, or what they were, let me rephrase it. They did everything they were told to do, right? Put money in the 401k, stay out of debt, pay off their house, and then their 201k became a 401k became a 201k overnight, right? And then that really opened up my eyes that there's been a recession, or they like to say correction, literally about every 10 years.
Right.
So there were some of my clients that actually did very well during that time. So I went to them, how are you in this position? What are you doing differently? What books are you reading? And then one, I'm sure a lot of your listeners have heard Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And I'd say that I took the purple pill.
Right. Like, the purple pill. That's great.
This was so different than me as a CPA, what we're telling people and what my financial planner was. And Robert Kiyosaki's goal is you don't need to wait till you're 59 and a half. We need your passive income to be more than your monthly expenses. So similar to what Cameron was doing, I started doing this myself. Then my clients were like, hey, Anthony, I don't trust Wall Street. What should I do with my money? And so I'm like, well, this is what I'm doing. And so I kind of added that to my CPA firm. And, you know, my goal was, our goal is we wanted to be one of the best in the country about infinite banking. And we felt in order to do that, we can't be an expert in multiple areas, that we had to be laser focused. So I sold my firm about, I think, in 2015 and started doing this full time. And that's when I ran into Cameron, and I put him under my wing and became his mentor and idol. And
and idol?
Man. I just threw in the idol.
Yeah.
Wow. You know, we like to have a good time here. So now all we do is, our goal is to help people get financial freedom. Again, not high net worth. It's that passive income. Get that passive income more than the monthly expenses. And we do that by combining the rich dad, poor dad, and what Cameron had alluded to, the infinite banking concept. So when I read this book, Becoming Your Own Banker, it sounds dramatic when I say it, but it literally changed my life. It kind of opened my eyes to how capital works and how finance works. And so we combine both of those teachings to help people achieve their goals.
That's great. You know, I'm thinking how like there you in both of your stories, and like we could probably have a whole podcast on what I'm about to say, which is there's a whole piece of like a dissatisfaction with like being presented with, well, this is how it is. You give us your money and, you know, come back when you're, you know, 59 and a half or whatever. And then you can get your money and, you know, just go with the system and, you know, kind of in my head, I'm imagining you saying or having a feeling that something along the lines of this can't be the way it is. And, you know, kind of looking or, you know, pounding the pavement, you know, as a metaphor for some other way. And then, you know, through luck or, you know, hard work or a combination of the two, you know, coming across, you know, the infinite banking, mm-hmm. you know, model. And then, of course, taking the purple pills, you said. So I've got like a bunch of questions about infinite banking, and your job will be, you know, as you see fit, to make sure we're not going down a rabbit hole on like the technicalities of infinite banking. So you just can correct me as we go along. So, but the first question isn't too much of a rabbit hole, but what is infinite banking? How do you describe infinite banking? Oh, wait, before we go there, is so if there's infinite banking and then on the one side, and then there's like conventional ways to bank or, you know, have institutions hold your money. Does it make sense to understand how those other institutions like make money on your money? Because my understanding of infinite banking is you're making money on your money. Is that a correct concept? And if it's not, you know, that's fine. I've been incorrect in my assumptions.
No,
I'd say it's a fundamental concept, right? And once someone is shown or understands how banks just in general work, it becomes pretty apparent that you don't really need them, right? Because at the most basic level, what happens is you have somebody that goes down to the bank and deposits their own money, right, at the community bank, and then they walk away, and then somebody else comes up and asks for a loan from that same bank, right, and walks away with those dollars. And 9 times out of 10, Peter, that person is the same one, right? So when I came across infinite banking and this whole idea, I realized that, man, I'd financed, you know, several of my vehicles with US Bank, right?
Right.
But I also had all my money on deposit with US Bank, right? And literally the light bulb went off and it was like,
right,
these guys are lending me on my own money and charging me an interest rate, right? And so that was it for me. I had a really good understanding. And so you're exactly right. Once somebody understands that, we'll paint them a picture. And then you realize that banks really don't produce anything. They just take the community's money, lend it back out. And whatever, to whatever level you want to do infinite banking is how you take control of your money. And then you can use policies to do that. So,
all right. So let's get on to the infinite banking piece.
Let's do it.
Yeah. All right. So what is infinite banking? You know, let's start to talk about how it works, what's needed.
What I would say is infinite banking is not an investment. It is more of a cash management tool. Right? We need, particularly investors, we need to store our capital somewhere. Now, we're going to need to use a bank to pay our bills, you know, for Cameron to buy all of his cases of Paul Mitchell Mousse and all of his hair products. We got to have some, you know, somewhere to pay our bills. But what I view infinite banking is, I view this as my rewards credit card for investing. Like, for example, do you use a rewards credit card, Peter?
Yeah.
Why don't you just pay cash instead of why use a rewards credit card?
I get obsessed on the points and what I can do with them.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing, you add one extra step using your credit card, then you pay it, and then you get some extra bonuses, miles or cash back. Mm-hmm. If you can understand that, you can understand infinite banking. Okay. I mean, we can go down the rabbit holes, and obviously I'm more of the analytical person. So sometimes I can get too deep, but it's just like using your rewards credit card, right? And what we're going to talk about is similar to, instead of using cash to buy your investment, we're going to use an infinite banking policy. And if I kind of step back, what I would imagine what most investors are doing, they're keeping some money aside. Maybe they put money aside systematically, or maybe a lump sum when they sell an investment. We got to store it somewhere, right? Somewhere that's safe and liquid.
Right.
So, Peter, where do most people, where are they going to store that money that's safe and liquid?
I mean, it's going to range, but there might be a savings account, a CD, which isn't, you know, other people that have more risk, you know, are going to put it into a mutual fund, and, you know, on and on mm-hmm. it goes.
Yeah. So we got to put it somewhere.
Right.
And again, most people are going to use a bank mm-hmm. or, I mean, we can have another podcast on the safety of banks, but that is another
right.
Mm-hmm. But what people do is they put the money inside that bank. And then when an opportunity comes, they take that. Let's say they buy a syndication, or maybe that's part of a down payment of the investment. Whatever your asset of choice is immaterial to how this works. But we buy an asset. Now, if it's a true asset, it's going to produce income, whether monthly cash flow or quarterly, or maybe upon the sale, there's going to be profits. And we take that return of capital and our profits. We got to put it somewhere, so we put it back in the bank. And maybe we take some money out for lifestyle or to enjoy, but then we store it there ready for the next investment.
That's right.
And we buy asset number two, and we got to put that cash flow somewhere, and we put it back in the bank. For the simplest terms, all we're saying is, instead of using it at a bank that's safe and liquid, we can use a specially designed whole life policy. And this policy is very different than what most people think. Because I remember when I had my CPA firm, I'd get these whole life guys knocking all the time on my door, you know, trying to get me to send them clients. And I'd look at the numbers and I'm like, that's a lot of death benefit, but I have no cash value to year three or four. That really isn't conducive to what I'm trying to accomplish. Well, we got to put any of our thoughts or misconceptions about a whole life aside, because the policy is designed very different. We're designed it to minimize death benefit and maximize cash value. And the reason being, because the cash value in whole life it's going to earn a much higher rate of return than we are in a typical bank. Also, that interest is going to be tax-free, and each state is different. But each state has some level of asset protection. In the state of, I think in Arizona, Nevada, and Texas, and Florida, 100% of your cash value is protected from lawsuits. So particularly if you're an LP or whatever your risk of, or you're a GP, there's going to be some risk. So we can put that money, instead of a bank that's safe and liquid, we're put into a policy that I'd say is safer, just as liquid, but has some additional benefits. So we can, and again, a lot of clients dive deep into the mechanics of a life insurance policy, as well they should. But what we're really trying to do is replace that bank account. And all the policy needs to do is outperform a bank account, and it'll do that all day long. And the biggest advantage and the biggest reason why we use whole life is because one of the downsides of using a bank is when we withdraw the money to buy the asset, we break the compound interest curve, right? We have drained the account. We no longer earn interest. But the way we access money in a whole life policy, we have the ability to do a withdrawal, but we also have the option to loan against it. So we use that loan to buy the asset, and we use that asset to repay the loan. So what that...
And here's where you're like, just to, and don't lose your thought, but here's where you're literally, you're acting as mm-hmm. the bank.
Yeah.
For our, like when we started the conversation where the, you know, you give a, you know, $100 or whatever to US Bank, and then you then borrow some money to buy the car, and US Bank is taking your money and then, you know, lending it to you. But in this instance, you're like putting the money into your policy, and then you are borrowing against the policy which you own. Mm-hmm. So you're now the bank.
Yeah. Exactly. And
All right. But I didn't mean to interrupt.
No,
but
Peter, this is your show. Yeah.
Invest me. No, please. I'm glad you did, no. Peter. I was falling asleep. But, yeah. All right.
Let me just add a couple more comments.
Please.
Another advantage of using whole life over a bank is the interest that we pay back to the insurance company can be tax deductible. But the interest they're turning around and paying us is tax free. So this is one of the only product I've seen where there is an advantage, meaning a lot of times you pay taxes here, but then you got a deduction here. So it's like a wash. But here is the only product, right, I know where we get a tax deduction on the expense, but with the gain is tax free. And since we never withdrew the money in the policy is continuing to grow during this whole time. So we've never broke the compound interest curve.
Right. Right. That's key. So your kind of marginal like rate is probably is less than, you know, if the interest rate of growth is just for easy numbers is, you know, 4% or something, just for a number. Mm-hmm. And the rate that you borrow against is, you know, 6%, then it's 2% is your net, you know, is really what your cost is.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Peter. At first glance, that's what most people perceive, right? 4 and 6. But again, that 6 is tax deductible.
Right. So it's even less.
So depending on your tax bracket, maybe it's around, let's just say it's 4. So you're earning at 4 and you have a loan at 4. Again, the first reaction is, well, that's a wash, right? But there's a difference between compound interest and simple interest, right? If we have a loan and after a year of making principal payments, that loan balance is going to be lower, right?
Right,
right. And the year after that, lower. When we're compounding, that balance is higher. So even if the interest rates are the same, even if the loan rate is higher, the power of compounding is still going to outweigh the cost of simple interest.
All right. That makes sense. Let's talk about funding, how this gets funded. How does it get funded? What's required?
Great. How in the details you want to go, but when you set up a policy, right, typically the way that we're going to set it up is we're going to look at what somebody's able to save monthly, annually, something like that.
Okay.
But we got a ton of options. One of those is like a one-off design where, hey, if somebody has a lump sum of cash, right, we have a design that we call a one and done, where you can write a check for a bigger amount, put it in, turn around and leverage it immediately, where you don't have to fund it anymore. So that's one option that we've used for real estate investors quite often. But traditionally, how people will fund a policy is, hey, I set up some sort of monthly savings out of cash flow. And then throughout the course of the year, if we have what we call little windfalls, right, is we have the option of dumping that into a policy. So it's usually a combination of a monthly and an annual contribution to create that cash value in a policy.
So the VSV2 fund we're launching here, and we're really excited about it because the team has been hard at work researching funds, researching the right structure, making sure it's the right fit for our investors for the last 12 months. A lot of hard work has been put into it. And what it does for our investors is allows a lot of diversification, right? So you're no longer investing in a single asset and hoping that asset performs. We're going to be purchasing 6 to 10 different assets in different markets, which gives a ton of diversification for our investors. So really excited about this and launching it to our investors.
Okay, so this is good because that's what I was working towards, the question about the one and done. Because my misconception was that the way this worked is that, you know, your target customer was somebody who might be in their 20s or maybe early 30s, had a W-2 job, had the ability to, you know, put a certain amount and, you know, kind of a painful amount in each month over and over and over again. And by the time they were, you know, 50, let's say, the balance started to become meaningful, at which point they could, and I'll exaggerate a little bit maybe, is they could borrow like 30% of the balance. And then by the time they were like, you know, then they were 60 or whatever, they could borrow more. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but that was my kind of misconception. Mm-hmm. And so then I thought, well, you know, what if you're somebody who's, you know, doesn't have the W-2 job, so doesn't easily qualify for consistent income, but gets, you know, a commission or, you know, sells a property you know, how do they participate in this? Can they, you know, if they have a, you know, $100,000, you know, that they earned and they have that net cash in an account and a Schwab account, and they're like, you know what, I want to put it into one of these accounts. Can you help that person? So it sounds like you can. Can you talk a little bit more about, you know, the kind of those different scenarios? A little bit more detail?
The way that we, I mean, again, we're really big on education because this concept is different. And we want people to know the good. And also, I mean, with everything, there's good and not so good.
Sure.
So we want to make sure that we present both sides. And we do that with education. And we have an online course. And at the end of the video, we will give you a link to free access to our course. But to answer your question, Peter, I'm going to give you a case we're working on now where I have a client who was sitting on $300,000 in cash and was going to use it to buy a house and pay for it in cash. Now, the ability of leverage, that's a whole nother question, but sure, whether it's a down payment or he's buying the whole thing in cash. Well, we says, wait a minute, just like your rewards credit card, instead of using cash or using a credit card and getting miles, he's going to use his policy and get uninterrupted compound interest. So what we're doing is we're taking that money and really we're transferring it from a bank, from somebody else's bank, and we're creating his own banking system and a policy. And then with this design, by the end of year one, he's actually going to have more money than what he put in. So he put in 300. At the end of year one, he has slightly more than 300. But what we're going to do 30 days after this policy is in force, we're going to turn around and he's going to take a loan from his policy and buy that property in cash. Now, so the part of the loss of liquidity is very minimal during that. And then what he's going to do is now he has that property that's going to produce, he believes, about $2,000 a month in income. And he has a couple other properties that are both producing about $2,000 of income. So what we're going to do, what he was doing before, he was sending that $6,000 into somebody else's banking system.
Sure, sure.
All we're going to do is just redirect that. And now we've created a place to store $300,000 in that one and done policy. So he's just going to move that money, put it in the policy. Again, it's asset protected, earning a better rate of return, and just as liquid. And we can talk about how safe this is compared to him using somebody else's bank. Right.
That's great. What about the, just, you know, the kind of, how much can you borrow against you know, whatever you have in your policy? Are there set numbers, or is it as your balance goes higher, you can, like, what's there?
So if you've got $100,000 of cash value that's in your policy, most companies are going to lend you 95% of what's available in there.
Oh, so that's I thought you might say 50%. So
no, it's about 95%. If we have situations, we have kind of partners where you can actually take your cash value, and just like you would with the insurance company, you collateralize the cash value and you take a loan against that policy, is you can take it to a third party, you can take it to a bank. And what they'll do is there's some providers out there that will allow you to take a loan against 100% of the cash value, right? So if we're looking for every dollar that's available to us, right, that's still an option.
So kind of going, you know, shifting high level now, you know, if somebody's taking money out of their whole life policy, what should they be thinking about, you know, so that they're being a good steward? Of that action of taking the money out. What should they be thinking about, in your opinion?
You want to? Go
ahead. Yeah. I've been talking a lot. Go ahead.
You have been talking a lot. Peter, that's a great question, right? And number one is being a good steward of our money. And so if somebody researches infinite banking, they go online and they listen to a lot of people talk about how great this strategy is. There's some people out there that are talking about using cash values to finance liabilities, and like being a car or something like that, right? That's what we've been using before. And you can do that. You'll make money doing it, but infinite banking is much better suited if you go out there and you use it to acquire appreciating cash flowing assets. And so number one is, if somebody's tapping into cash value, is we want to make sure we know and understand what we're investing in. And then that cash value piece is vital, because you want to have that cash value come back and replenish that loan that you're borrowing against. You don't want to have to pay that out of pocket. So those are the two things that kind of come to mind.
Would you like to add anything?
Of course. But what I would say is, we need to think like a banker. All right. Because we're an investor, right? And maybe we're also still working at a W-2 or whatever our lines of business is, but we have to realize, well, now we also have a bank. And so what that means is, if we use money from our policy, we need to be a good steward and pay it back. We need to treat it,
it's
right?
It's good advice, Anthony.
Thanks. Yeah, and we have to realize, because what a lot of some people will say is, well, when we hear loan, well, I don't want to have a policy loan. And they're thinking that loans are bad. But, you know, what we have to ask is, a loan an asset or is it a liability? And most people are going to say it's a liability,
right?
Because they're the one borrowing it. But what is it to the banker? Right? To the banker, that loan is an asset. So really, we have a loan, we have a liability and an asset, and they do offset it. And for example, with going back to the example I'd mentioned, where a guy running $300,000 through this policy, one of his concerns were, hey, what if, worst case scenario, what if, let's say, the asset burns down to the ground and there's no insurance, right? So he has zero money, but then he's thinking, well, hey, now I have a loan. So is it a double loss? Is what you might think. But again, we have to realize, we had that liability with the policy loan is backed up by cash value. So you have that asset there. Worst case scenario in this situation, he cancels the policy.
Right.
And he doesn't have to pay it back. And he's in the same position he would if he would have paid cash.
Right. Yeah. And I love your responses and if, you know, taking it even a little bit more granularly outside of in terms of the question of, you know, what would one maybe should be thinking about taking money out of their policy, borrowing against their policy. You know, I'm thinking as in like investing in real estate, of course, is, you know, whatever you're investing in something is in this, particularly now in this market, is to be really focused on whatever you're investing in, its ability to cash flow and cash flow like as close to, you know, day one, minute one, hour one, versus, you know, in 6 months, it'll start cash flowing, 9 months, it'll start cash flowing. So less on the appreciation, more on the cash flow. So that's, you know, those were some thoughts that came to mind. I mean, I think this is really, here, I'll ask a question. I know the answer. Do you think this should be taught in schools?
Absolutely. We're teaching it to our kids. I think it should be taught at the earliest age possible.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, the model of the banks, you know, God bless them for like their model. You know, they've made tons of money, but this makes so much sense. And could you imagine if your kids who are like 18 or 19 or 20 or whatever, the youngest age that makes sense, start doing this in whatever capacity they can?
You know, Peter, I'm going to come at it a different angle. I don't think this should be taught in school. And for one, I don't want the government involved in figuring out and what they're going to tell my kids.
Wow, right.
But what I think we need to teach our kids this.
Right.
And the best way to do that is to do it with them.
Right.
Like, for sure. I mean, for one example, what I've done with my grandson is we're putting money into a policy on him. So now he's got death benefit. And a lot of times people don't think about death benefit, but unfortunately, my daughter's had two brain surgeries. Mm-hmm. So she's not insurable. She cannot get another policy. We're actually trying right now. We've been declined a couple of years ago, but so at least now she has some death benefit. But
right,
what we're going to do is, as the cash value in my grandson's policy grows, I'm going to use it to buy an asset. And then when he's old enough, I'm going to take him to that asset.
Right.
This is yours. It's not grandpa's. This is yours. And when he gets a little older, I'm going to show him the numbers.
Right.
And help him get involved. And our projections are by the time he's 20, he's going to have $20,000 a year in passive income.
Wow. Yeah.
And, but more importantly, he's going to know how that passive income was made.
Right.
So now,
and that mindset is going to have a profound impact.
Yeah.
I mean, my parents did, you know, not what you've just described, but some of what you described with me, and for better or worse, it changed my mindset in that I wanted to be an entrepreneur, kind of chart my course.
Yeah.
You know, take calculated risks. Did they all work out? Of course not. But at least I was, you know, putting a stake in the ground and being thoughtful in my actions.
I'll tell you what, I was raised by a single mom who raised two kids. There wasn't much money around, and let alone financial education, right? So I didn't learn much about money growing up, but I want to make sure that my kids cannot stay the same.
That's great.
So we're very passionate about teaching the next generation.
That's great. That's a great inspiration.
Peter, what I would add to that is, even if you look at wealthy families, right, is usually it is one generation has accumulated all this wealth, right? There's like this high mega producer here that has created everything, and a few times does that translate down to the next generation.
Right.
So there's this gap, right? And so I would tell you that some of our best clients have used infinite banking to educate that next generation on how to be a good steward of money and how they acquired it, right? Most kids are just taught, man, you know what? Dad's got a whole bunch of money, or mom has got a whole bunch of money, and if I go ask them for it, I can get it, right? But through infinite banking, is they're teaching them how to create wealth and how to build a business, how to buy a business, how to manage it. And so that's one of the big things I've seen just on the wealth creation side.
Excellent. All right, guys, final two questions. One question for each of you. Anthony, so what encouragement or advice would you give to the younger person who sees, you know, a ton of value in the infinite banking, wants to do it, but, you know, for whatever reasons, you know, can't seem to carve out the monthly contribution, whatever the excuses might be? What encouragement would you give to that person to find a way to do it?
The first goal is not to have infinite banking or have policies. The goal is to create passive income. So your time will come when it's appropriate to get a IBC policy, right? If you're just out of college, maybe you can save, you know, very little. So what we want to focus on is that education, learning to create that passive income, learn about how money works, find a mentor, and think long term.
That's it.
And when the time's right, we will be there to help.
That's excellent. I didn't expect that. All right, Cameron, similarly, what advice would you give to the older person who's in their, like, you know, late 40s, early 50s, who might think there just isn't enough time to do infinite banking, doesn't have a ton of cash, but has some? What's your advice?
You said late 40s, early 50s, like it was the end, Peter.
Well, I know, but you know, I mean, they're, you know, they're tired. They're, you know,
yeah, no, I get it.
I'm trying to paint a picture.
Yeah. And what I would tell you is that, right, is I got off the phone is either this morning or yesterday morning with a young lady that was, you know, mid 40s, right? And really her sentiment was, man, I why didn't I know this sooner? And why isn't everybody talking about this, right?
Right.
Why isn't everybody doing this? And so that is the sentiment that most people kind of, after they see it, that's what they come with. But if I were to talk to somebody that's, you know, late 40s, early 50s that doesn't have a lot of money, what I would tell them is something that they already know is that nobody's going to come in and save you, right? There's nobody that's going to come in and do it for you. And so at this point, right, late 40s, early 50s is, you know what, you better go figure something out, right? So it starts with education, and you better go get really, really good at that. And so that's what's going to drive this, is your effort and the education and time that you put into getting really good at something. So whether it's learning to invest in multifamily or learning to be a general partner and create a fund, something like that, that's what's going to drive it. And so in the infinite banking piece, right, that's the piece on where do we keep your money in the meantime. So as somebody's starting to save up, right, that's where you'd want to put the money to make it safe and protected. But that would be my message to somebody that is that age group that's just getting started, is Nobody's going to come in and save you, so you better get busy.
Great response. All right, guys. Thanks for coming on the show. If two things, if listeners want to get a hold of you, how do they do that? And how do they access your course? And in both instances with those two questions, those hypothetical people should take the course.
Yeah, they can. So as a thank you for having us on, Peter, as we alluded to earlier, is that we do have an online course and we're going to give your listeners free access to that. Anthony mentioned it earlier in the episode, but once you go in there, it's all just infinite banking education. It's case studies, right? It's very practical information. You're not going to find anything salesy in there. Really, what we're hoping is somebody goes in there, looks at some of the content and realizes pretty quickly, hey, whether infinite banking is for them or not. And so we'll give you guys free access. It's infinitewealthconsultants.com/verticalstreetventures. And that'll take them to a landing page. That'll get you in the course. So go ahead and go in there and look around. But also infinitewealthconsultants.com. That is our website. We have a ton of resources there. And then also we're on every, you know, kind of major social media platform as well. So we'll get that over to you.
And this info will also be in the show notes. And for those listeners who would like to connect with me or would like to be on the show, please feel free to shoot me an email at peter@verticalstreetventures.com. And as always, please consider subscribing to the show. And if moved, please leave a 5-star review so we can continue to have terrific guests like Anthony and Cameron share their insight with us. And with that, thank you for listening. And I wish you all a terrific week.
Go make it a fantastic day.
Take care.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please go to iTunes and leave a rating and written review to help us grow and reach more listeners. Subscribe too, so you can get the latest episodes. Lastly, to stay updated, head on over to verticalstreetventures.com. If you're interested in learning more about what we do, you can schedule a call with our team on the website. Thanks again for joining us. Be sure to tune in next week for another episode.